Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. I'm Beast Sino, and this is my co-host, Avenger Satanus. Avenger, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I guess that's the short definition. It'll work. A little bit mellow, a little bit distracted. Ready for a good show, so let's get it on.
A good show? Oh, crap, I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah, well, I think we tried.
Just kidding. Yes, I'm in a mood for a good show, too. And I think this is going to be just as awesome as the previous two looks into objective reality, so I'm excited with that. We've already got Deadpool with us, and hopefully, I guess, one or two other people, right?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, Deadpool?
Hey. Looking forward to a great show, man. That's what's up.
Good. So, Deadpool, what have you been up to lately?
Oh, man. Enjoying the summer. Beautiful day
good.
Outside. You know, a lot of weddings, actually. Now that you mentioned it, I've been to a lot of weddings. I got one I'm going to today, as a matter of fact.
Okay, cool. Are you in California, or where?
Yeah, California, man. The place to be.
Has it been really rainy where you are, or is it just Wisconsin?
Just Wisconsin, as far as I know. I mean, it's been just beautiful, sunny weather, man.
Okay, because we get on and off rain and sun. This has been the rainiest season since, I don't know when. Like, every other night, seriously, it's a thunderstorm. Like, every other night. And then every, other or third day, it's raining, all throughout the day. And then the other days, it's, scorching hot and extremely humid and muggy and really kind of crappy.
So the rain,
I mean,
when it's rainy, is it hot, humid rain?
Yeah, mostly. I guess when it's raining at night, it's down around low 60s, high 50s maybe. So, but I'm usually not out at 2 in the morning when it's thunderstorming anyway. So,
dude, that's terrible, man. I can't stand the humidity, man. And the East Coast is
pretty fucking humid. But hey, at least good ritual weather for the night, because you know, what better time or more appropriate setting to have some sort of dark ritual than in a thunderstorm. So, that's pretty cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Anyway, maybe we should get to the topic at hand. Zeno, do you want to start us off?
Actually, I was kind of interested to see if Dark Fool had something different to bring to the table other than what we've been discussing
that's
in
true.
The past few days.
Yeah, you're kind of a new addition to the topic, so yeah, why don't you go on for a bit. Start ranting, Dark Fool.
All right, well, I mean, I wouldn't exactly say I'm a new addition. I've been a listener since part one. So, I mean, I've just been, I've been kept quiet and just kept busy. You know, it's been busy in my life, but, you know, with the topics have been getting so good that, I mean, just part three, I mean, I can't believe it's, Bistino said, I can't believe that it's gone on this long to even make a part three, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great topic, and I made a video, because I didn't want to take up too much airtime, but just to recap it a little bit, I believe it's a very interesting paradox, objective reality. It's like I see a dualistic nature and a holistic nature within it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go. No, please. Actually, you were getting ready to answer what I was going to ask, so.
Oh, all right. With what Jason King brought up in the last show about there being two poles, I see that as very true. You know, it's like, you know, they're very symbiotic, subjective reality and objective reality. And, you know, I see what happens to one affects the other and vice versa. And at the same time, you know, one can, you know, there's also a bit of isolation, you know, like what you do to one can affect the other, yet they're all part of the whole. That's what's very interesting about it.
Mm-hmm. I would absolutely agree with that. That's if you were to try to nutshell everything that we're talking about, you know, that's really the focus of this is how they're intricately connected and yet at the same time appear to be diversified. So
absolutely. And one of the examples I brought up in the video was like let's say like a house burned down. You know, it's like that affects your subjective reality because you were used to living in a house. And yet, if you changed your subjective reality to where you can build your own house, you know, you can affect the objective through the subjective.
So you're saying that means they're pretty separate or they're mutually exclusive? That the subjective doesn't tie into the objective and vice versa?
Well, no, they're part of the whole, but that's what's interesting is that they're, like, one can be isolated from the other. At the same time, they're both... how should I say, symbiotic.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, if you change your subjective reality, you can change the objective.
Right.
And that's actually where I would agree. Where I would agree with the... I would actually agree with Aquino on this one.
Okay, and that is...
Oh, well, that's where you... basically isolate your subjective reality and build it to where you can cause change in accordance with will in the objective reality.
Okay.
Okay. See, yeah, there's another kind of interesting thing that goes on top of this because, you know, I'm all for the idea that by, you know, shifting certain things within your subjective reality, you can ultimately manipulate the objective reality. But the problem really lies in this. Things are constantly happening, and most of those things can't be directly controlled by you all the time. Like, for
Absolutely.
Instance, say, my brother, he was very suicidal all the way up until his mid-20s. And, you know, I had this mindset that, you know, I could talk him into seeing why life was worth living. And so I kept on him. But in the end of it all, I still ended up visiting him in the psych ward for, you know, days at a time until they felt he was fit enough to let go again. And so the cycle would start all over again. The problem with trying to actually manipulate the objective reality through subjective means is that you have to understand the full nature of that objective reality. You know, like, for instance, I couldn't change his nature.
True.
You know, I could manipulate, you know, the circumstances completely around it, but because I'm not actually working with his nature myself, you know, my will, so to speak, falls on deaf ears.
So are you saying that the individual is responsible for their own subjective reality and it's extremely difficult to change another person's subjective reality?
Well, but it falls in more than just on a personified level. Like, for instance, you know... careers, a job career. You can think that you're making all these right moves, you know, that are going to take you into the next level. But in the end of it, there's variables that, you know, you really don't have much control over. And it just so happens maybe there's this one vice president who to your face seems like he really likes you, but, you know, when he goes home at night, he masturbates to the thought of firing you. You know,
sure.
You don't know that, and you can't see that element working within the bigger picture, so it's constantly grinding against you.
Well, there, I mean, when it comes to other people, see, other people's mannerisms and other people's, unless they're really good poker players, there are some things about them that you, I mean, if you're perceptive enough, you can catch on to, you know.
Certainly, but you multiply that same scenario.
But you're absolutely right. There are some things within the objective that are too big for us to change. Same thing with other people's subjectives. I mean, we brought up a while back, I believe it was Venger, I believe you brought up, you know, like getting women into bed and lesser magic, you know, that being much more effective than greater magic, or was it Jason King? I don't remember. But that was brought up as a point at which you're trying to convince somebody's subjective, you know, to change in accordance to your will. You know, now, so, I mean, there are elements of that, and it may or may not. I mean, magic is definitely, in my opinion, it's like a crapshoot. You know what I mean? You do your best to change the objective, but also at the same time change your subjective, you know, as well, your perception, your consciousness, and your awareness.
Yeah.
Hmm. And see, by doing your best, I think that the best illustration that we could give is if you could picture an old brick dam, and your will is the water that's pressing up against it. And the only way that you're going to break through that is if you get enough force built up behind it. It's going to have to come in one current, one rush, and it's going to have to be strong enough to crack this dam. Otherwise, it's just going to seep over the top of it, and the dam's still there. I mean, the current will happen for a little while, and then, you know, the rush is done, when the momentum has been exhausted, you know, that dam is still back there.
There's another option. You could do what I suppose Gurdjieff would call the way of the sly man, and you could take some sort of pick or drill or, you know, or maybe even your hands, and dig away at one little brick or one little section that is particularly weak or weaker than the other ones on the lower part of the dam. And you could get that out, and then, you know, it would cause a high-pressure stream to come out, and eventually the water would drain out. It would take a long time, but that's another route to go besides, like, brute force all at once.
Oh, certainly, but either way, you have to do something directly to affect that particular dam.
Right, right. Yeah, you can't just wait for an act of God, like a lightning bolt or something, to strike the dam and, you know, blow it open for you. You got to do something on your own.
Well, also, yeah, you have to put some stock into probability, you know, one of the best things that I love about left-hand path ideology is that you work with nature, not against it. So it's more likely going to rain, and you'll pick up more water and thus more momentum, especially with tides and currents to like knock over that dam. So you work with nature on that sense. But yeah, waiting for a lightning bolt to actually strike, that's too much of a probability. That's too high of a probability to put your to put stock into.
Of course, if you built, like, a metal lightning rod, like, on top of the dam, then I guess that would be increasing the probability that lightning would strike. I don't know what the effect would be of lightning striking a metal rod connected to a dam. That's kind of a silly
thing. And the fact that your subjective reality is aware of that is causing change to occur in accordance with will.
Yeah, I think to a certain degree. It kind of almost works into the secret, which is, I would say the secret is somewhere between lesser or maybe even coming up with a new word or phrase like passive black magic, where you kind of visualize stuff and you sort of put stuff on your vision board or whatever, and you try to attract these good vibes But, you know, I think The Secret is different than actual black magic, where you're really forcing your will out into the universe in order to affect some dramatic change, you know.
Well, I think what determines black or white or gray or green or whatever is the will of the magician, the practitioner, and to begin with.
Right. Well, yeah, when I say black magic, I guess I mean self-serving, like left-hand pass sorcery.
Okay.
That's what I mean by black magic. I mean, it's, I use that pretty loose and generally.
Right.
I guess. Yeah, I could call it gradient magic, or, I just try to differentiate between what some people would call white magic, even though LaVey didn't believe in that, where you, you know, you supplicate yourself, you know, and you don't want to do anything for yourself, you just kind of want to, I don't know. I mean, I guess there isn't any white magic, because, you know, you have to have a purpose, and, you know, you have to have something behind your energy, some sort of desire or will or something, and, I don't know, even if you're helping someone else out, somehow that's going to help you, and so it's still a selfish act, and it's still technically black magic, in my opinion, but whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm with you on that one, especially, I mean, the terms, you know, white magic, black magic are just very loose. I believe we're all on the same page that we see magic as, you know, a tool. Like, you could build a house with it, or you can, like, smash, like a hammer, you know, you could build a house with it, or you could smash somebody upside the head.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's a great analogy. If I can go back to what you were saying about dualism, just to recap for a second, what I was talking about in the last show, and maybe the first one, too, of this series, I was talking about, like, a trichotomy or, a trinity, seeing things in, like, a pattern of three, I guess, instead of a dualism.
Instead of dualistic.
Right. But if I, you know, what you were saying just now, or earlier in the show, and what Jason King was saying last week, made a lot of sense, that there's some inherent need to create a polarity or a dichotomy in our thinking and how we view reality. And then I was thinking of, you know, the three forces and how there's like a positive, a negative, and then a neutral or reconciling force. And so maybe that's technically not three different poles or three different things, it's really two things with a third offshoot or like a middle ground between those two.
Right. I remember.
So really,
it's a two
plus one.
There you go. Okay. But the other thing about that is you can have so many. In a way, it's really strange because it can be multiples. I mean, the way I look at it is this. You know, you could have it broken down into so many ways. Like, let's take multi-working, you know, multitasking at work. You know, it's like you're on a computer, you do like five things at once at the office, you know, but you're doing one. I mean, you may be putting on different hats, but you're at the same job in the same office. So, I mean, no matter how much it gets subdivided, it almost comes down to two in a way.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there's a definite breakdown pattern where that is not only easiest, but it seems
if you want to look at it this way, maybe not even two, maybe just zero and one.
Yeah, that's perfectly logical and has validity too.
So, listening to this, I mean, it makes sense to me that, you know, the duality that's attached to something is attached just to something. Hang on one second, guys. We got, it looks like we have Jason King now on the line.
Okay.
All right. Mr. King?
Yeah, dude. What's up, man?
Hey. What's up, Matt?
What's up, folks?
Hey.
What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, Jason?
Yeah, I figured I'd give my word, so I'll... Yeah.
Or
I didn't really want to...
Or you give me enough rope to hang myself with, huh?
No, not really. I think you've honed the conversation in on what I think it's really about, which is why...
Oh, okay.
Or the reason why we cannot... Like, we have will. We have a subjective reality, to use Aquino's terms, as you were saying earlier.
Uh-huh.
But why can't we just will reality the way we want it to be? There is there's something, we classify these things subjective and objective. But what's the difference? And why can't we just, you know, do what the hell we want? What is the barrier, in other words?
Right, right.
Well, that's an obvious thing.
Is it obvious?
I think so. You can't be both at the same time. You can observe both at the same time, but you either need to be subjective or objective in any case or scenario.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, I think that this wall, so to speak, this barrier we keep hitting is a combination of two things: elements that are too much subjective, you know, that won't allow our consciousness to go past a certain point, and the other part of that wall is objective, in which things that are beyond our control keep hitting us.
Right,
yeah,
and it's
kind of, that's kind of the nexus of what I'm asking, is what is that, you know, differentiation between the objective and the subjective as far as your wall? I mean, you can go to the Gospels, and Jesus says, if you say to the mountain move, it will move. Does he mean that literally or figuratively, or even if he means it figuratively only? I mean, what the fuck? What are we talking about here as far as the ability of a subjective consciousness, which a subject is a perceiver, somebody that is observing reality, and then reality is everything around it. We can, you know, interact with that, of course. That's physics. But why can't we just will our reality onto the world? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I still stick with what I was saying. You, at any point in time, you're playing either one or the other role. You're either the thing, the perceiver, or the perceived.
I believe Nietzsche also had a philosophical concept for the Apollonian and the Dionysian.
Hmm. Well, there are certain laws that prevent us from just willing something to happen. Like willing my leg to turn into a banana. There's certain physical laws in our universe that prevent that from happening, even though it's our will. Because when we will something, something needs to take place, some sort of physical activity. I mean, I could will myself to, you know, lift up the keyboard and throw it out the window. And I could do that because I could use my arm to physically do that. I just don't think our consciousness is in the same dimensional framework as the universe, and so we can't just tap into that, you know, as if our mind was somehow hardware or software in our computer and make it go. You know, we can't just think of something like, you know, think of 100 women just being in my room naked right now. I can't just think of that or will it. And then it happens, you know. I need to do some groundwork. I need to make some calls, you know. I need to pay some pimps off. I need to do something. I can't just imagine it and then boom. Unless I just wanted
what
to do
what are you talking about,
imagination.
Man? That happened to me last night. It's crazy.
I think dude is hitting on it 98%, man. This is 98% of what I'm saying. I don't agree with it 100%, but I agree with it 98%. This is exactly the... This is what I'm trying to hone in on the discussion. The discussion we're having is the difference between the subjective and the objective, and why can't the subjective affect the objective as though it were pure will? I'm not asking that as though I'm an ignoramus and I just don't understand why. I'm asking it as food for discussion.
Right.
And I think, Venger, you hit it right on the fucking head, man.
There is a disparity.
There is a disjunction, in a sense, between what we call the objective pole and what we call the subjective pole. Now the real question is, why? Why is there that disjunction between the two? I mean, if you talk to people like John Alley and, you know, these fucking wishy-washy fucking wishers that think, like even The Secret. I think The Secret is a bunch of bullshit, dude. For the same reason.
I think The Secret is a watered down version of what left-hand practitioners do anyways.
Well, of course, but it's still bullshit, man. I'm sorry, man. I have to call the spade, man. That's what it is, dude. It's bullshit.
Well,
like you want
something, for,
like you
some
put
people
it,
that
it,
can't
it,
take.
A tooth fairy. It's a tooth fairy fucking spirituality. Take the tooth out, put it under your pillow, and then... What?
The people that can't take the full left-hand path ideology or you know, the adversarial current or satanic gnosis or whatever you want to call it, the people that can't do that, it's like a gateway drug for the left-hand path. I don't know.
No, I would actually disagree with that, because if you look at The Secret, it's far more successful on a mundane level than I ever will be, probably, at least in my lifetime.
Okay.
And that's the question to be answered. That's a different question. It's not the question we're talking about now.
Right.
That's a different question as to why people prefer...
Secret. Go ahead.
Now you go ahead.
Well, The Secret is very right-hand path, and it appeals to people's already preconceived notions. That's part of why it's been successful. It's just peddling, you know, it's a different package for something that's already been put out there.
I totally agree.
I don't agree with the fact that it's right-hand path, because... Okay, this is my little disclaimer. I haven't read The Secret. I just have here and there assimilated fragments where I think I know what I'm talking about, okay? But from what I know, The Secret is, it's about getting what you want. It's not about servicing the universe and God. It's about, you know, it's about getting paid. It's about finding your own path and...
That's true, but have you ever heard of, I hate to cut you off, but have you ever heard of something called prosperity theology?
I never have, no.
Okay, within Christianity, there's actually a whole subset of people that believe in this. They believe if you put the fucking tooth under your pillow, you're going to get the fucking nickel or whatever.
Wow.
They really believe that. Seating, everything else. I mean, if you watch these preachers, they come on TV. They come on TV all the time, like Creflo Dollar, and I mean, there's hundreds of others like them that say all you have to do is tithe. If you just tithe, give 10%, then you'll get back that and then more.
Right.
It's the same mentality.
What you put out in the universe is what you're going to get back, and in fact, Christianity's whole basis that you're going to get, it's a pie in the sky. You know, you're going to get a reward in heaven, you know, in the afterlife. Not this life, but the afterlife.
You know, prosperity theology actually turns that on its head and says that, you know, the true follower of the Lord will be successful in this life and in the next, which kind of nullifies Christianity. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's kind of silly. I mean, okay, you and I, Matt, we understand. We know a guy named Tim, and he hates this shit too.
It's
something out there. It's something out there, just like the fucking snake handling cults and all that other bullshit within Christianity. It's a perversion of their message. But what it's saying is that if you just have faith, it can move mountains. It can move mountains of gold. In this case, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what this whole mentality came out of, which is why Oprah Winfrey is so, like, positive on it, and why all these other fucking people that are nominally Christian are so positive on it.
Well, I don't believe that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've seen lately, you know, a lot of people within the satanic community kind of taking a rub to this shit. Now, it's just kind of irritating me in a way.
Right. Well, you need to, my main emphasis is that you need to keep, you know, you need to lay the groundwork, you know what I mean? You need to that's why I put a lot of emphasis on lesser magic. You need to go out there and get a job. You can't just expect things to happen.
Right.
Well, no, I know. And the fucking secret is a big fucking lesson in pyramid schemes and lesser magic worked on others, meaning the people that buy the book. The guy that wrote the book is fucking, like, rich as all balls. The people that buy the book and just put the fucking tooth under their pillow, 9 out of 10 of them are fucking poor and are going to remain poor and will always remain poor. And all we'll ever hear about is the success stories and the people that, like, the 1 out of 10, the 1 out of 100, the 1 out of 1,000, the 1 out of 1,000,000 that actually made something of it. But they made something of it on their own. They already understood these things. You know what I mean? So it's like this is like the same guy that comes out there and says, I'm going to tell you the secrets of making money in real estate. Well, if you're telling me the secrets, why are you telling me the secrets, man? You know what I mean? Right. Obviously, they haven't panned out that well for you, so now you have to sell them as a fucking, like, book or as an infomercial or what the fuck ever. You know what I mean?
That kind of goes back to what you were saying about the imminent divine speaking for itself rather than having to have a spokesperson for it.
Yeah, it's a small example of this. I mean, I really hate the fact that I got on this fucking phone and I called into this show and I devalued it. I really feel that I did. Because it was great before I got on. No, seriously, it was. And I just fucking shit all over
it.
I don't know what the fuck I did, man.
I call bullshit.
I think if you have knowledge and faith,
I call bullshit on that.
And, you know, the will to put what you want into practice, then you really have the groundwork of what I would call, you know, a true religion or some origin or root of religion or spiritual path that actually makes sense. And any kind of, you know, foundational or primal religion is going to benefit you in this life and, you know, after you die. So in that way, I think the positivist or progressive Christianity or whatever you said, in that way, I mean, that sounds legitimate, but put a tooth under your bed and not do anything else and then just expect the tooth fairy to come, that's pretty ridiculous. But if you actually logical work behind it and some real-world effort, then I can get on board with that. I mean, that's what we do with the Cthulhu cult. I mean, sure, you got to have a certain amount of faith and you know, you got to put something into the intangible, but you can't do that alone. I mean, you've got to, you know, put some muscle behind it or some force, or else, you're not going to get anything out of it.
Gentlemen, I think this all really falls into what Gurdjieff was talking about when he was talking about the laws of influence. Like, for instance, that success story, the 1 out of 1,000 that Jason's talking about, the 1 out of 100, whatever it is, that they understood the influences and they took those influences and they put them together and made them work for them. It's not so much that they had to build from the ground up, but rather that they had to find what was already working and hone it together.
I think that's
really what the core of this is. You know, that those larger forces that we were talking about earlier, that, you know, we don't have the ability to really understand them, to even be able to manipulate them. You know, those are at work regardless. You know, it's just when you find one and you do have an understanding of it, and you know how to make it work with what you're trying to accomplish, you can achieve these small things. You know,
sure.
Like, to me, monetary gain is a very small thing, because if tomorrow somebody declares that money is worth nothing,
right?
Well, then you don't have anything at all.
Right.
Well, if you took
that
already
money,
have
you invested it unwisely.
What's that?
Like, let's say you had this, you know, awesome business that was short lived, but you made like $500,000, and then you put that $500,000 into, you know, BP stock or something, like a month ago, and then let's say you're down from $500,000 to like $50, which is ridiculous, but let's just say it happened. And I mean, that's just the same as everybody declaring, oh, American money is no good now. You know, basically you lost the money. And so what was, you know, how much power do you have with the money?
But also, let's look at what money also represents. Right? Money can not just represent monetary gain; it also represents power and influence, the ability, you know, to have more options available to you. You know,
right.
So, I mean, by wishing for money, even though it may seem minor at first, you can actually do more with it if you're fully conscious of its possibilities.
Right. But see, the thing is that the value of that power and money, or at least the basis of the value of that power and influence in money, is a false. It's a false basis. It's something that, you know, like I said, somebody can come out tomorrow and say it's just not worth it anymore, and there goes your power and influence. It's gone.
Right, or
well,
like the gold standard going down.
I mean, I don't think it's any more false than, you know, people saying that the color red is red. It's a belief, and it's not inherently true or false. It's just what a lot of people believe. If you just change,
yeah, widely accepted. I was about to say that.
Yeah, so if you just change beliefs, then, you know, to a lot of people, money is objective reality. You know, because they can't see any farther than that. That's their definition of, you know.
Because they see an object purchasing other objects.
Right. Right.
Hmm. Interesting. Two things. First, Jason, how many beers in?
Say what?
How many beers in?
All of them? I don't know.
All of them?
Not like 12 or something. I don't know.
And
there was a 24 Corona. I don't know if I should count that as one or two. I should probably count that as two, right?
So
was it in one bottle?
Lucky 13.
Yeah, Lucky 13. That's what it is, too.
All right. Sounds good.
Do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, actually, what I was saying before was that Venture said somebody could come out tomorrow and declare money, you know, irrelevant or a joke or whatever.
Actually, yeah, he said that, but yeah.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah,
well,
I
I guess I'm gone then. Thanks. Okay, no, but really, what I said was, what I said was
I'm
that somebody's already done that. It's already been done. Money is pretty much irrelevant. And I think Matt hit on this when he was talking about the gold standard and taking us off the gold standard of exchange, because money has no real basis in reality anymore. It's just kind of like I owe to you and you owe to me, and we agree on the owing and all that kind of stuff. But that's almost irrelevant to what – and not really irrelevant, but – what I wanted to hone this conversation in on, or what I thought was interesting about this conversation, was the nature of the difference between objective and subjective as far as the poles of perceived reality. There cannot be any differentiation between the two as far as we can't eliminate one in favor of the other, which is what I think a lot of people want to do, is say that, you know, either one is, like John Alley wants to get rid of the objective in favor of the subjective, and then materialists, pure materialists, want to get rid of the subjective in favor of the objective. I don't think we can do that. I think we have to focus on the interaction between the two and figure out exactly how they are interacting.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is the interesting part of this whole, like, three-part conversation. And I think we've wasted a lot of time, and me personally, I've wasted a lot of your time on this.
No.
Bullshitting and, like...
Well, what's being alluded to is a third possibility.
Which is?
Which is somehow like a line connecting the two.
Right. No, the line connecting the two is consciousness. You can't have consciousness without having the objective and the subjective reality. The question is, how do they differentiate, and how then do we use that to move forward? Like, I listened to the part of the conversation before I called in, and it was like you were talking about magic and what does magic do, and we're often posed with this as magicians. Like, well, if you're a magician, then why can't you just, like, you know, cast a fireball or some shit like that, some dumb shit like that, or, you know what I mean? Why can't you just, like, create $1 million or something like that? Although those questions are silly on the face when they're asked, they pose a more serious question underneath that most people are oblivious to, because they just take those as being trolls and say, fuck it, they're trolls, I'm not going to answer that question. No, but there is a real question underneath of that, which is, we have will. We have a magical will, capital M, magical will. We have that. Then why is it that we are not creating aeons and paradigms completely, just willing them into existence and having them be what they are? Why does there need to be work, capital W, involved? Why is there that objective component, and what level does it take in the whole process? You get what I mean?
We were talking about earlier. We were talking about a dam earlier, and I see that as like preconceptions, you know, to break through.
I agree entirely.
I see this universe as a prism, and that's why our consciousness and our magical will is like extremely limited and confined, and, you know, we have to work within all these silly laws and rules of the universe and the world.
Okay, it's a prison.
We can't really do much.
It's a prison created by who? Who created the prison?
Well, I guess I would say by the lesser gods of the earth. By whoever created the prison. The Demiurge. I mean, we kind of allow this prison to be around us because so many people are, I would say, asleep or, you know, not paying attention or living mechanically. But so the people are the part of the problem, the prisoners. But except for the ones that want to escape. But it's whoever's running the universe, whatever gods or entities or forces are created the universe or our world and are keeping us here and keeping things in motion, keeping the rules in the game. That's, you know, those are our prison wardens. That's who's keeping it the way it is. And I want to break out
with you. You said prison wardens. Do you actually believe that? That sounds like a David Icke or like a Alex Jones or something like that.
It does, but I'm not saying it in like, there's this guy, there's one fucking guy.
I know
guy,
what you mean.
He's
it's
like,
Gnostic. You're talking Gnostic.
The chair, and he's actually doing it. I just mean, I mean in a more vague, metaphorical, like, sense.
No, but you can't mean it vaguely and metaphorical if the actual prison is real, can you? I mean, it's got to be pretty real to have a real effect, right?
Well, it depends on what you mean by prison and what you mean by real.
If there's any prison that I see it as consciousness itself. I think that the more you break that down, the more you can push past barriers.
Oh,
but you can never like, I don't care how conscious you are, Gurdjieff himself couldn't like point at someone and like shoot a fireball out of his hand. Or he couldn't like turn day into night. He could do a lot of stuff. A lot of lesser black magic, a lot of greater black magic. You know, especially if he honed his will and you know, created some force within himself. He could do some cool, crazy stuff. But our consciousness in this prison can only go so far. It can't go beyond certain laws. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I think it's a prison. It's because, you know, there's a lot of rules, and it keeps us grounded. And we're not really free to do what we want. So in that way, I see it as a prison.
I heard a major disagreement on your part, Jason.
Say what?
I heard a major disagreement, a loud no.
Say what
maybe
again?
It was soft no. Anyway, so yeah, talk about this and let me hear what you guys have to say. Cause sure, I could be wrong, I guess, but that's just the way I see it.
Now, actually, I disagree with you almost. Not. I don't disagree with you per se, but what I'm saying is if you have these categorizations of reality, like there's all these rules and you feel imprisoned and all this other stuff, then the question becomes who's doing the imprisoning and who's making the rules?
Right.
If you can't answer that question definitively, then you have no concept really of reality. Then you're just kind of wishing something was other than what it is. And we all do that from time to time.
How can you definitively categorize something that you have nothing but circumstantial experience with? Or you know, you can understand it on a tangent or an adjacent kind of level, but you don't have any direct experience with whoever is controlling the prison or creating it or running the prison. The prison wardens or, you know, the prison rules or the bars on the cell. You know, it's all
You're an intelligent guy, and I know you've read and studied a lot of things, physics, and you've studied mathematics, everything. Well, I mean, even the base level. I'm not talking about, like, higher levels or anything like that, but the base level. You studied a lot of things.
Sure.
And it makes sense to you or it doesn't make sense to you. Either there's a reason for what we experience or there isn't a reason. And what you're saying, at least the way I intuit it, is that there's a reason, but that reason is oppressive. And that's almost the opposite of where I'm coming from. I see everything as being a manifestation of exactly what it's supposed to be. The powers, I mean, they're powers above the master, of course, but it all makes sense to me. Not saying that I understand the entirety of it. No, but I mean, it all makes sense to me. It all fits within. There's no prison. The prison is our mind, like the Dark Fool was saying, in that you have a conscious filter that is a filter. It filters consciousness. It's not pure consciousness. It is consciousness limited. You get what I mean?
I think Gurdjieff would agree with that.
But the reason that you have a filtered, unpure, or impure consciousness is because there is something making your consciousness.
No, it's because we are what we are. There's no reason for it other than that we are what we are. I know what you were getting ready to go with, but I'm sorry, man. I hate to cut you off. It's your fucking show. Go ahead, man.
No, I understand what you're saying, but to my way of thinking, you're still substantiating what I'm trying to say. Why are we what we are? Because we were created in such a way, on such a place. We were created as prisoners inside of
No, that's it. You're reading into it then at that point.
Well,
when you say
so
prisoner, you're reading into it. You that's a victim mentality. Why? I mean, why go there? Why say you're a you're not a victim just because you can't perceive the totality of everything doesn't mean you're a victim or that you're in a corner or that you've been boxed in or that you're a prisoner. It just means that you're limited. We're all limited. That's part of the nature of perception. That's part of the nature of perception. If perception wasn't limited, it wouldn't be perception. If we couldn't perceive that X was different from Y, if we saw everything all in one continuum of existence, of perfect existence, of godlike existence, then we wouldn't be perceiving anything at all. It would just be like a nothing almost.
Well, then why don't we have a godlike existence?
Because we're not God, we're us. We're experiencing the reality that we're experiencing. That's why.
But why? Why do we have to experience such a limited reality?
If I may interject, gentlemen, I believe that we are part God, in a way like we're kind of experiencing ourselves.
But don't you think that we're
I agree with that.
God on an extremely limited capacity? If that's true, don't you think those limitations have been put in place for some specific reason or purpose?
Yes, to understand. I mean, from our limited perspective, we push past that and we grow more of an inner knowledge of ourselves and of our surroundings. So it's in a way,
it's essential to understand. But you know, people by and large can't really do anything. They don't even really have consciousness. They just live automatically.
Everything is consciousness. You can't say something has no consciousness. So you can't do that. You're violating one of the main rules.
Well, what I'm saying is it's not conscious. I'm saying that...
Why not?
It might have some degree of consciousness, but it's on a very limited, lesser degree.
Who are you to judge what is conscious?
I just look around, man. I just look around and I see what I see. I interpret it the way I... Yeah,
just
I'm
like
the judge
me.
Of my
no,
own
I'm
reality.
A judge too. I judge shit just like you do. I'm just saying. I figured I'd throw that out there. I just, you know, that was one of those fucking tools.
That's cool.
No, but it,
hey, Beast, you know, you're probably... Okay, Beast, you've heard me go on and on. You've read all my stuff, you know. We think a lot of times on the same level. A lot of times we think on different levels, which is awesome. What do you think of the discussion? You know,
well,
the
issue here is exactly as everything else that we've all been discussing throughout all of these things. We're all really talking about and trying to describe the same thing. The problem is that perception happens. And
no, okay, we're on something new now, though, Beast.
Yeah, I understand. But
I want you to focus on the specific thing that I was just talking about. And what these guys...
Actually, he's on point. He's completely on point here.
Yeah,
okay.
And to build on that, when we all see something in the objective, we're all going to see it. We may see it, but we're seeing it from different angles because of perception.
Right. And what I'm saying here is that the sleeper, the man that isn't conscious, he is experiencing a level of consciousness, but it's not a higher level of consciousness. It's more what you could assume that a dog or a cat has. You know, he's not pondering the end of time. Now, I mean, maybe I'm not answering your question because I don't understand it specifically.
No, you're starting to. But why? Okay, why is it like that? Why is man frequently on the level of, you know, a dog or a cat rather than on the level of someone that's using the higher areas of the consciousness?
Well, because it's a matter of perspective, and perception itself is something that's developed. It's something that's grown.
Okay, so why are so many perceiving people underdeveloped?
Why are they? Because they don't realize that it exists. I mean,
why is that? Why don't they realize it exists?
Because they're asleep. I mean, that's, you know, that's,
exactly.
I agree with that. Why are they asleep? I think because they don't understand what's out there, that they don't pay any attention to it. It's, you know, think about it this way. If you had a 50 megaton nuclear explosive sitting in your living room, but you had never seen one and didn't know what it was, over time at first you would go, oh, what's this? And you would look at it, but over time as you kept walking past it, eventually it becomes like that knick-knack sitting on the shelf. You're not really even aware that it's there. And it's the same
right.
thing.
Why is that awareness hidden from us?
That's a good question. I honestly cannot say that I can answer that.
Okay. Well,
I'll answer it for you. How about I answer it for you?
My opinion is
I think it's hidden by design. I think it's more of a fact that it's hiding in plain sight. But you're the one, it's really your consciousness that's hiding it.
Okay, but I keep begging the question, why is that?
I'll give you the answer to that. Let me give you the answer to that. Why is that?
Okay.
Evolution.
Yeah.
Evolution,
okay.
The conscious filter that we call the brain, that filters consciousness, capital C, into small c, into big M, into little m mind, has deigned that because of the way the world is, that it's survival of the fittest. So you don't necessarily need to know the square root of pi in order to fend off a tiger. If you had to do that, then maybe you wouldn't be fending off the tiger, and then you would die. So you don't pass your genes on, etc. Say what?
But the human consciousness is the one thing that human beings have that all other life on the planet does not have. That's our one evolutionary strength. So that doesn't make any sense for it to be so underdeveloped in so many people.
It's not underdeveloped. It's exactly developed. It's exactly developed as it should be.
Then why is it so limited to with so many people?
Limited according to what? You mean you can reach for the stars, but you can't grab them? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking
that's
about
the beauty. That is the beauty
of
our consciousness.
Don't even realize 90% of the people on the planet don't even realize the metaphorical stars that are out there.
And
we're starting to run out of time. We've got about 2 minutes here, guys. So
this
let
has
me real
be
quick.
A part four, motherfucker.
We ended up right where we began, man, with objective and subjective. I mean, there's objective evolution and subjective evolution.
Exactly. We ended right where we began, and we will always do so. This can go on forever. Seriously, it could.
It certainly could.
This is fucking great.
Let me just answer something.
This is one of the greatest shows, if I may say so. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I agree. Let me answer something, gentlemen, before we wrap this up. The answer, I believe, that maybe not that Derek Benzer necessarily was looking for, but the one that is warranted is because we need to do the work. That's the answer. That's how consciousness develops. That's how evolution happens. You do the work, and you evolve.
I think for people to understand why the work is important, they need to see why it's important.
Right.
Because
well, we have a minute left, Derek, and I know, Benzer, I'm sorry, and I know that we had intended to finish this show off a certain way. We could maybe come up with another category for next week that'll stray just a little bit from this, but give us more of a chance to, you know, delve into this subject in a different direction. I think I have an idea, so we'll see.
I have a couple of my own as well. I would love to discuss this with you, too.
Okay. So
okay. Great.
On that, do you have anything else to say, Mr. Deshaw?
I think we kind of ran out of time this time. I'd like to postpone.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
We'll hit up Lucky 13 another time.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been a great show.
It has.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having us.